Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Hi, and welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show. This is Janie Lee Grace. So as you know, we are doing a few shows where we include a little segment with Dr. Bumi Abuaba. I got some great feedback from the last one where we're talking about cravings and freedom from cravings and how we can just overcome these unwanted thoughts. And I thought we'd actually cover two aspects of this today rather than even just the one. So I've also invited William Porter to chat to us about his take on, well, obviously his thing is alcohol. So he's written some fantastic books. He's written Alcohol Explained, but he's also written Nicotine Explained and Diet and Fitness Explained, by the way. But he has a really unique take on how we can really get to grips with what's going on with our thoughts, and particularly when it comes to cravings. And I thought it would be really helpful to hear from William directly. His books have changed so many lives. I can't begin to tell you. It's really amazing. I love working with him. He's contributed to my book, Happy, Healthy, Sober. He does a lot of work for us in the Sober Club as well. So he's a fantastic, he's just a fantastic kind of brain on all things addiction related, really. And of course, as you well know, I'm not talking about people at rock bottom who are clinically dependent on alcohol, but the majority of people who are drinking more than they want to, people who drink who are what we now know the term is grey area drinkers. And so William has a great take on this. Make sure you check out his book, Alcohol Explained, if you haven't already, and have a look at the section he wrote for me in Happy, Healthy, Sober as well. So let's hear from William, and then we're going to have part two from Dr. Bumi Abuaba, the food addiction coach, on her tips for freedom from cravings. William Porter, thank you so much for being willing to chat to me yet again, because I can never get enough of your logical approach, which complements my bit of fluff beautifully. So thank you. I really appreciate it. We absolutely love your work. We bow down to the stuff you've done, and you really have changed so many lives. I mean, it's just amazing. And it really is. Not just Alcohol Explained, but, you know, your other books, Diet and Fitness Explained, Nicotine Explained. I just found that on my shelf the other day and realized I'd given it to a friend who's doing really well, you know, and had been smoking for years. Your kind of method really, really, really works. So just before we get into our main chat, just can you just give us a really brief potted history as to how you came into all of this, in case there's anyone who is new to your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started drinking and smoking, I think, when I was about 14. And smoking, as it took over quite quickly. And I came across Alan Carr, who wrote his Easy Way to Stop Smoking. And I came across that quite early on. I think I was about 16 or 17. And I read that, and it was a real kind of wow moment for me, because it was like he took such a logical and pragmatic approach to it. It didn't actually stop me smoking, funnily enough. I continued to smoke for quite a long time after that, although I'd stop and sort of go back into it. And while that was going on, my drinking kind of escalated as well. And to cut a long story short, I was always a binge drinker, but my binges were getting longer and longer and longer. So they were lasting, you know, you'd start off drinking Friday and Saturday night, then it would go through into Sunday, and then I'd ring in sick on Monday, and it was getting increasingly unmanageable. So I stopped drinking finally back in 2014. But I suppose the main point was I'd kind of taken that Alan Carr-esque curiosity and looking for sort of pragmatic and practical answers to things. And I suppose unwittingly analysed my drinking as it got progressively more unmanageable. And that's basically what Alcohol Explained was. So that was it. It was that sort of very practical, pragmatic approach, trying to understand what was going on with regards to alcohol.
And where did you start then in terms of your research? Because, you know, I mean, even now, of course, there is this debate, stroke argument, stroke big old row sometimes as to, you know, whether we can be born with a propensity to have addictive behaviors and to crave alcohol, or whether it's learned behavior. So, you know, I'm guessing that formed part of your research in the early days.
Yeah, absolutely. So, strangely enough, to begin with, I never started researching with the view of writing a book. And obviously this is the days before the internet. So I remember being at university and I found every time I drank alcohol, I would wake up in the early hours of the morning. So one afternoon I found myself in the library and I just started researching alcohol and how it affects sleep generally. So it wasn't so much that I on day one thought, right, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to research it. It was more just for my own curiosity. And as the years went by, I kind of started to piece together more and more of it. When I sat down to write Alcohol Explained, I thought I had a fairly, you know, global view of alcohol. But of course, when you start to write something, you realise there are gaps in it. Mm. So I kind of went back to the drawing board, as it were, to sort of fill in some of the gaps when I wrote it. Mm. So it was kind of that two-pronged approach, really.
So what do you think on that note then? Do you think there are people that, you know, that some people do have? I mean, do you think there's any genetic links?
So there are links, but not absolutes. Mm. So there's a very simple dynamic with alcohol, nicotine, all of these addictive drugs, where your brain tries to compensate for them. And when the drug wears off, you're left with to put a global word on it, you just don't feel pleasant. Yeah. You need another dose of the drug to get back to where you you feel normal and confident and happy. And that's the crux of physical addiction. That can happen, in my opinion, to anyone. Mm. Absolutely. But I think that there is a kind of a link in that, you know, on a genetic or natural, you know, on a really basic level, we for example metabolize alcohol differently. So some people will metabolize it slightly different to other people, purely in terms of speed. So some people will be able to naturally drink more, for example. Now, if you can naturally drink more, you're more likely to be able to drink more and drink on more occasions and more likely to become addicted to it. So I think, you know, in the UK we've got a population of sort of 80 million people. I think something like 1 in 12 drinkers have a medically diagnosable dependency on alcohol. Now, I've no doubt that if you look at populations, you may find that, you know, that 1 in 12 tend to, have a slightly higher genetic code of this or that or whatever it might be. But it's not absolute. I think Professor David Nutt put it very well when he said, genetics can only be indicators because it requires voluntary repeated behavior in order to become habitual, which I think pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, exactly. And it is that habitual behavior and the fact that, you know, that it forms associations in the brain and it tells our neural pathways, oh, this is what we do when we're feeling, well, either excited, celebrating or miserable. You know, amazingly, alcohol can allegedly do it all, right?
Exactly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk. for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It is bizarre. Tell us some of the things that perhaps surprised you when you were doing your research, and some of the things that you found that you really wanted to know, you know, for your own benefit? I mean, you've mentioned sleep and alcohol's effect on sleep. I'd be delighted to know about that. But anything else that you found was actually quite surprising, or that you particularly wanted to know about?
So I think it all comes back to that basic physiology that I mentioned very briefly, whereby the brain tries to counter the effects of a drug. And when the drug wears off, there's a chemical imbalance, which has a practical effect of leaving us feel kind of like out of sorts or unpleasant. So alcohol being a sedative, the brain tries to counter it lots of different ways, but essentially it becomes hypersensitive. It releases certain naturally occurring stimulants like adrenaline and cortisol, which is a stress hormone, to try and counter the sedating effects of the alcohol. So when the alcohol wears off, there is a corresponding feeling of anxiety. And I quite often say, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So alcohol is a sedative. It does decrease or inhibit nerve activity, but there's a corresponding and opposite feeling when it wears off. And I think that's one of the most interesting parts, because, you know, we quite often talk about, you know, I mentioned myself, that diagnosable physical dependency. And then we quite often link that to withdrawal. But in fact, everyone who drinks alcohol has a withdrawal to it. It's just the only differentiating factor is in terms of how severe it is.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is so bizarre when you think about it. I know you and I have had this conversation before, that relatively bright people like us would be caught in this trap. Because surely, you know, we've said this before, but when we eat something that doesn't agree with us, you know, and we realize, okay, that food made me sick or gave me a headache or whatever, we go out of our way to never have it again. I mean, you know, unless it slipped into something by accident, we never have that again. So obviously we have that instinct when it comes to food that makes us feel ill. Yeah. But it's just bizarre when it comes to alcohol. We just do exactly the same goddamn thing over and over again.
It's almost a rite of passage, isn't it? Because that hangover thing, it's almost, particularly when you're growing up, you're a teenager, it's almost like, you know, you compare hangovers to see who's got the worst one. It's almost a badge of honour.
Yeah.
We've kind of gone completely the wrong way with it.
So it's all societal then? That it's not that there's something in our brain?
No, I don't think so. I think it is exactly that. It's, you know, we are encouraged from quite a young age to drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. I think it is better these days, but certainly I remember growing up in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, you put on the TV whenever somebody was stressed, they'd reach for a drink or reach for a cigarette. And you still see it a lot these days in quite a lot of programs, not so much with smoking, but certainly with drinking. You know, when people are stressed, when they're unhappy, they drink. And that's quite a message to be sending to young people. It's just, you know, that repeated thing. And of course, when they come to of age, you know, they go out socializing. There's lots of alcoholic drinks there. There's a lot of pressure to drink. And so it becomes that, you know, so they start that cycle of drinking and drinking and drinking. And they may be lucky and they may escape from it, or they, you know, they may be unlucky. And for various, mainly societal reasons, they tend to drink more, and of course that's where the problems come in, that repeated consumption.
Yeah, and it is that cumulative effect, isn't it? Because you know, most of us had a good few years where we certainly believed it didn't affect us, or we recovered very, very quickly. But then it's the cumulative effect. You start to need more to get that hit, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. It affects us in quite a few different ways, but one of the most important ways is how it affects our subconscious, because I've just spoken about how, you know, every drink has a withdrawal. But then, you know, people will then often say, well, that can't be right, because, you know, I've drunk however much for however many years and I've never become addicted. But of course, withdrawal is only the physical part of addiction. There's that mental element as well. You know, to put it very simply, when a drink wears off, it leaves a corresponding feeling of anxiety. It's not a very nice feeling. And of course, the more you drink, the worse it is. But, you know, we're human beings. There are lots and lots of reasons in our lives why we might feel unhappy or out of sorts or stressed, you know, like work and relationships, children, all of these things cause stress. Most of the time when we feel bad, we just shrug our shoulders and get on with it. So you can drink, you can have the withdrawal, you don't feel right, there's that unpleasant feeling, but it doesn't actually do anything. You just get on, you know, we're busy people. We don't really pin it down and attribute it to anything. Mm. We just get on with things. But what the subconscious learns over years and years is that actually, if you have another drink, it relieves that unpleasant feeling. Now, when the subconscious makes that connection, that really, for me, is the tipping point, because every time an alcoholic drink wears off, it leaves an unpleasant feeling, which it does for everyone. But when you've been drinking for, you know, however many thousands of drinks over however many thousands of occasions, and your subconscious makes that link, it starts to interpret that feeling as, I want another drink, because it's learned through experience that another drink will relieve that feeling. And of course, when you get to that point, every time a drink wears off, it causes a desire for the next one. And that's really what people mean when they say, I don't have an off switch. What they're really saying is, my brain has made that connection. And so the wearing off of one drink automatically causes a desire for the next.
Yeah. Yeah. For anyone who, you know, there'll be lots of people who get ask this question, you know, what do I do then when I've got cravings? So just explain to us again exactly what a craving is, particularly if you're trying to stop and you're in the early stages. After the first few days when the alcohol's left their body, it's actually in your head.
It is, yeah. So this is one of the things, there's kind of this misconception with cravings that it's almost like just something that happens to us, you know, like you're out and it rains and you get wet and it's like, oh, I've got wet and oh, I have a craving. But actually, there's a very specific thought process we go through cravings. So obviously, the first thing is the thought of an alcoholic drink enters our head. And that's why people often talk about triggers. And what they're really talking about there is something that put the thought of a drink into my mind. But it's what we do with that thought, which is crucial. Because if we, I think I've broken it down in the books to sort of five different processes. But what it really amounts to is firstly fantasizing about it, so thinking about a drink and thinking, you know what, a cold glass of wine or a, you know, a cold beer or something would be really nice now. And then starting to, you know, to play it out in your mind how it would feel. And the key thing here is it's a fantasy. Yeah. So we tend to fantasize about it and build it up to be far more than it really would be in reality. And I've said time and time again, if alcohol is how we imagine it after we've stopped, no one would ever stop drinking.
No, exactly. No, I mean, they never show the adverts of the pissed people, do they?
No, waking up
to sell their product.
Yeah, feeling awful.
Yeah. Anyways, William, we could talk forever. Can you just remind us and obviously we know about your books, but just remind us of your course and how it works and how you know, we can access that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So the course is on the website, which is alcoholexplained.com. And what we really did, we tried to put a course together that was almost like a interactive book, if you like. So it covers everything that's in Alcohol Explained 1 and 2. And it's really a program just to work through. And what we tried to do was to come up with virtually everything that keeps us drinking. So all the reasons why we want to keep going back to it. And do basically what I did in the book, which is, you know, break it down and really shine the light of reason on it and see if it stands up to close examination or not. And spoiler alert, it doesn't.
Brilliant. So there won't be an excuse that you haven't thought of, basically.
No, hopefully not. No. Yeah,
brilliant. William, thank you. I really appreciate it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello, this is Dr. Bumi, the food addiction coach, bringing you the second of a four-part mini-series of tips and ideas around beating food cravings to gain a healthy relationship with food, get your bower back and thrive. Today's episode is called The Cheater. Why does your mindset go against you? Last time we talked about the various ways that negative eating patterns arise and how this can lead to an unhealthy relationship with food. But you can change your eating behaviour if you change your mindset. So let's talk about how to get it working with you and not against you. Mindset is everything when it comes to all aspects of health, and the way you think can completely transform your eating habits, from helping to put an end to mindless snacking and binging to changing the way you think about the foods that you can eat. You can then begin to develop a robust and healthier relationship with food. Let's have a look at your current mindset. If your current mindset is that you want a quick fix and want to dive into an unrealistic fad diet, you're going to want to ditch this idea as soon as possible. We want to stop the pendulum swinging from feast to famine, the mentality that causes feelings of anxiety, shame and guilt, to a pendulum that's stationary and balanced, where eating is calm, peaceful and joyous. Start to think about transforming your eating habits as a total lifestyle change, and remember that slow and steady wins the race. You don't have to get rid of every bit of sugar, for instance. Small and consistent change is going to help you get to your goal. Let's take a look at five hacks you can start using right away to transform eating habits that may just help you feel better than you ever have before. Hack number one, ditch the guilt. There's just no room for it, and there's definitely no place for punishing yourself if you slip up on your healthy eating goals. Stop feeling guilty. Show yourself some grace and just pick up where you left off if you do get off track. This mindset shift can take some of the intense pressure we tend to feel around food choices. Hack number two, think about what you can have rather than what you can't. It's easy to think about all the foods you can't eat and feel completely overwhelmed. When you shift your mindset a little, that's when the magic really happens. Want to add greens to your eating, but you can't stand broccoli? Well, instead of thinking broccoli is a stumbling block to eating greens, think about spinach, kale, asparagus, and other greens you can eat. This is a super powerful mindset shift that can completely transform how you think about your healthy eating. Hack number three, healthy eating is a form of self-care. Here's another big mindset shift that can be challenging at first, but really worth it. We have to stop looking at food as a reward or exercising if we overeat as a punishment. Both healthy eating and exercise are two forms of self-care, so we do need to reframe how we think about them. Take the idea of rewarding yourself with a bowl of ice cream, for instance, if you reach a goal, or making yourself run an extra mile if you ate that bag of crisps. Just remove any sort of reward and punishment around the conversation of food and exercise. So reward yourself daily with nutrient-dense meals and snacks instead of looking at cheat meals as your reward. Hack number four, keep it realistic. It's easy to get caught up in healthy eating goals and wanting to transform eating habits immediately. But radically changing everything right this second may prove to be too overwhelming, and it may set you up for a ton of disappointment. The bottom line, write down what healthy eating goals you have and then write out a plan to tackle them one by one. By no means do you have to remove gluten, dairy, sugar and eat more plant-based foods all in one go. Instead, shift that mindset and focus on one healthy eating goal at a time each week until eating habits are where you want them to be. Hack number five, take it one meal at a time. If you change your mindset a little and just focus on one meal at a time, things become much easier to handle and don't feel overwhelming. So ditch the idea that you have to have a meal plan and prepare your entire week's worth of food. Instead, just have a plan for what meals you're going to eat for the next day or two. This will completely transform your eating habits, making things so much more doable. Next time, you'll get to find out how to become your own superhero and really thrive. This is Dr. Bumi. For more information, go to www.thefoodaddictioncoach.com. bumi.co.uk.
Thank you, Bumi. We'll have another tip from Bumi in the next show. Meanwhile, don't forget that if you do want support and connection around cravings, then do check out the Sober Club, thesoberclub.com. It's low cost. There's just so much there, so much information and content and inspiration. And of course, support and accountability. And we've got some great events coming up as well. So make sure you check it out. In shows coming up in the future, I'm going to be bringing you a bit more information about some of the amazing brands who have entered into the Platinum Awards. I love it when I come across brands I've never even heard of before, or products that are still just really amazing and changing lives. It's very exciting to be part of something that focuses on holistic health and well-being. That's where it's at, right? Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.